Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. After a long 4th of July weekend, Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, you are my guest today. How's it going?
It's going well. I'm very excited. The only thing is I'm a little bit sad that the Dwight Mare is over. I loved the Dwight Mare. I want it to go on forever.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Dude, you're against it. You're all anti. It's so tiresome. And I'm sure a lot of people felt that way. But personally, I just found it so absurd and so ridiculous that a silly man held the fate of the most storied franchise in his hand, in his palm. And they were groveling before him, and all the reporting, the conflicting rumors, the idea that Kobe Bryant had to perhaps beg him to stay but couldn't do it. All of this male soap opera of the Dwight Mare, I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. I want it to go on for months and months and months.
Well, that's actually an interesting segue right away. Ooh. Because Matt Moore asked me to ask you, if Kobe Bryant is all about winning and doing everything it takes to win,
mm-hmm.
why didn't he beg Dwight Howard to stay?
Man, this goes back to the whole Derrick Rose thing. Remember when he was being praised because he didn't want to do any recruiting? But at the same time, you could say, well, you know, if he wants to win, he should maybe he should do a little recruiting.
Right.
That's
just a stupid, like I get the whole, like, I'm going to do it on my own thing. But one, you're not. And two, no, you should try to get better players on your team. Like, that's part of being a good leader, is recognizing that, right?
Sure. Well, I guess I'd answer it this way. Maybe Kobe thought he was providing the best message in that meeting, and that's just how he interpreted it. Not all of us are born salesmen, and Kobe Bryant doesn't seem to be. And also, I could sympathize to a certain extent, where he might just be sick of Dwight Howard being Dwight Howard, and now he's in this farcical meeting where they're just talking about how great Dwight is and all the things we're going to do for Dwight. And I thought Jason Concepcion Network had a really funny tweet about how in the third hour, Kobe just snaps and says, F it, everybody hates you. You know, you could see that temptation there. So I believe it's possible to be all about winning and just perhaps have the wrong idea of how to go about that in terms of recruiting a guy. And also, it's possible to be all about winning and just let your nature get the better of you and get mad at Dwight Howard. And also, I'd say it's possible that Kobe indeed had the best message for Dwight Howard, and it just didn't matter because, to use a cliche, at the end of the day, Houston was just a better option.
I've never liked the at the end of the day cliche. Well, I want to know what's happening at the beginning of the day.
You want the beginning, eh?
Sunrise. Well, give me sunrise. At sunrise, this is what we think.
This is a Linklater series.
I don't really believe that Kobe is all about getting championships anymore. And I'm not doubting his will to win and all that crap, so save me all that stuff if you're a listener and you're going to get upset by this, but I actually agree if this is the way Kobe thinks. He's won 5 titles. More titles are not really going to change his legacy. Like, I get it that it ties Michael Jordan and that's important or whatever, but no one's ever going to look at him and Michael and think, well, it's a toss-up. We don't know. They have the same number of championships. Like, no one's ever going to think that. So just real quick. On top of that, I think he wants more championships because he's that kind of a competitor, and, you know, winning them is probably a very good feeling. But I think more important to him is the all-time scoring. When he says he can still play 3 or 4 more years at a high level, that's calculating I need 3 or 4 years at a high level to get the all-time scoring record from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it's within legit – I mean, if he can score like he did last year, which coming off that Achilles, who knows. But if he can, that's legitimately within – shot of at 3 more years, and definitely within shot at 4 more years. So if he can do that, I think that's more important, because then I scored more points than anybody in NBA history. And you can come back and say, yeah, but Jordan, you know, took years off and he retired early and blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't matter, because this is, no one says like, oh, well, you know, Kareem scored the most points, but Jordan could have. Like, that's never a conversation you hear. It's always Kareem's the all-time leading scorer. Well, if Kobe Bryant can replace that name at this point in his career, I think that should be more important, just for the simple fact of, like, if you want to talk about legacy forming or legacy changing, another title isn't going to do that. Being the all-time leading scorer will.
Well, a few thoughts on this. First of all, it doesn't sound very professional for me to apologize for interrupting. That's not good radio. You should add a beep to it that just makes it sound like I'm unleashing a string of curses. Like, that's number one.
Like, I couldn't even get through my point. You were just like, no, F this.
Yeah, just a string of curses. Yeah. Number two, the funny thing about titles is that each one diminishes the next. You know, it just makes it seem, it almost reveals the absurdity of sports. That what's the difference between winning three and winning four? We know there's this huge difference between winning one and having none, but after a while, if you won a bunch, then what is the point?
Are you saying that Joey Chestnut's 69th hot dog this weekend was not as good as the first one he threw down?
That's apparently what I'm saying.
I think for those hot dog eating contests, they should have them like garnish the first one, eat it regularly.
Oh, just to enjoy it?
Yeah, just to enjoy it.
As a tradition. Yeah. I like it.
And then when that hot dog is finished, then they all go into like their, you know, carnivorous devouring of 80 hot dogs in 10 minutes or whatever they're shooting for.
Oh, it's religious. Yeah, it's ceremonial.
It's a ceremonial thing. You throw a little, you know, I'm not a relish person, but you throw a little relish on there if they like that, or some deli mustard. Like, let's get this thing going.
Maybe some guacamole, perhaps.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't put that on a hot dog necessarily.
I guess you've been out of California a while. I guess you've been in the Midwest too long, man, because we do that out here. We throw a little guacamole on the hot dog. Hell, well, I did that on July 4th.
We don't do hot dogs here. It's bratwurst.
Okay, it's the brat.
Yeah,
okay.
People are all about bratwurst here.
Well, to your point, circling back, in general, individual accomplishments are more important to players than the general titles. I mean, should I reveal this? I think it's okay to reveal this. I think this is okay.
Breaking news.
now that I've said this, I have to say it. But for instance, after Steph Curry was in a game against the Thunder, where the Thunder just murdered the Warriors late in the season, murdered them, smoked them off the court. There are a few more games left in the season, and everyone is doing the whole song and dance of, oh, I'm so sad, we just lost. You know, the players, I do believe, play it up a bit, just because we're going to criticize somebody if they're not appropriately sad after a loss.
Right.
And so the locker room kind of clears out a bit. And Steph Curry looks over at me and he goes, hey, man, how close am I to that three-point record? And I think that Steph cares about winning, and everybody there really does care about winning, but it's a long season. You have your individual accomplishments to focus on. That's the motivating factor that can just get you through almost the boredom of 82 games to have that individual goal, and I don't believe there's anything wrong with having that. And we see those individual goals come up all the time. Whenever you see a player hold the ball on a buzzer beater as opposed to ruining his field goal percentage. So, yeah, that makes total sense.
Well, I think you also have to be able to compartmentalize losing. Like, if you let it eat at you with every turn, that's not healthy. Like, you should be disappointed by losing, but you should use it as motivation and not, like, as, like, a depression.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. And people processed it differently. I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I was critical of how the Nuggets handled it after after losing the series. But I almost they were just so egregious. they were such goofballs.
We've been talking about you've mentioned this, like the Nuggets, like, destruction at the hands of Steph Curry. You know, yep. Masai Ujiri leaves, George Karl leaves, Andre Iguodala joins the Warriors. And now, worst of all, they just committed 3 years to J.J. Hickson.
Oh my God.
This is really
falling
apart.
Going.
Yeah.
It's like Steph Curry committed a hostile takeover of them by gutting them and just taking Andre Iguodala. I find it amusing at one level because it's the pumping up of Steph Curry that he demolished the Nuggets. But at another level, it's also that the Warriors are so poorly thought of that losing to them in a playoff series, everybody just commits Harry Caray on the spot. So.
Well, also, I like to think of it as in Fight Club, where Ed Norton disfigures Jared Leto, I believe it is, and he's like, I just want to destroy something beautiful. I feel like that's what Steph Curry wanted to do to the Nuggets. He just wanted to destroy something beautiful. Like, they were the hot team. They were, you know, every stat nerd's darling team, and he just wanted to take them out.
Yep, That was part of it. Part of it was also that they have very poor 3-point defense.
And really just did not care about leaving other guys open.
They did not care about leaving Harrison Barnes open, and Harrison Barnes is not the best 3-point shooter, but if you leave him wide open, he is the best 3-point shooter. So that's what undid the Nuggets. That and the Gallinari injury played a part, but I'm excited about this Warriors team. I don't know, even
without Dwight Howard? Were you hoping for Dwight Howard?
I was hoping for Dwight Howard at the right price. The Dwight Howard conversation is it's one where there are two extremes almost, or we almost overcorrect. In our demographic, the basketball nerd, people who are under the age of 40 demographic, I think what ends up happening is that we're so consumed with beating back against really dumb opinions about Dwight Howard, about how he doesn't have a post game or he sucks at offense and all of that stuff that gets yelled at him, that we don't actually deal with some of the legitimate concerns about his game. For instance, there's the back surgery element right there. I mean, that's a big deal. It really influenced how he played last year. You trend more optimistically about injuries than I tend to, but I worry about something that just impacted the very way he moves and the ramifications of that going forward. He's pretty short for a big man, historically short for like an all-time great big guy, maybe, you know, the shortest since Hakeem Olajuwon. You know, you can say that his wingspan makes up for it, but there's that. He can't shoot. He's very bad at shooting. There is the free throw issue. There's also the issue that he would be best suited to play in a Tyson Chandler style, but he seems to want to play in a Shaq-like style. I mean, every team was probably just totally selling him on being Shaquille O'Neal or that kind of player, while secretly hoping to force him into being Tyson Chandler after he actually agreed to play for their team.
Are you saying this is like when a movie trailer comes out and I say, oh, this is one I actually want to see in the theater. Like, I actually want to see this. And my lady friend is just like, oh, yeah, sure. No, we'll go see it. I'll definitely go see it with you. And then we never see it.
Yeah.
Is this just shining on like, oh, yeah, no, that's a, no, you, that's definitely something you want to do. Yeah, no, we're definitely going to do that. So that's a good
idea. All of them were going with the bait and switch, you know, or it could be another movie trailer analog. Perhaps it could be like a comedy, one of those comedies where all the jokes are in the trailer, but really, you know, there are just no jokes after that point. They're really trying to extend the best elements of whatever's going to happen for Dwight, and there's going to be all this drudgery for him when he actually signs up and he's with that team. Except in Houston, based on, you know, the stuff that Slim Thug has been talking about and the life that James Harden's been living, it seems like there will be plenty of fun to be had in Houston. But so I do have some concerns. I did have some concerns about Dwight Howard. I would have been really excited had they got him without having to part with Barnes and Thompson. That was my position. If they can get Dwight Howard without giving up both those guys and a pick, then I'm gonna be pretty happy. That's a really good price. If it's, you know, two picks, Barnes and Thompson, and it means that they don't have the flexibility to add anybody else to replace and to fill around that roster, then I'm gonna have reservations, even though I'm going to get it, and even though, gun to my head, I'd probably do it.
Yeah. I mean, that I mentioned this on Twitter before the decision went down, is once Iguodala agreed to sign there, it wasn't ideal for them to give up both Clay and Harrison if they had to, but it's not something that it shouldn't have been a deal breaker at that point, because you have Andre Iguodala. I think the key there is finding cheap minimum contracts until you can move David Lee, which probably isn't which is probably like 2 years away.
Well, my prediction is it's going to happen before the end of the year. That's my prediction.
They're going to move David Lee.
Yeah, it's my irresponsible, not based on a whole lot prediction. That's just what I think. The chatter has already started. That's a big moment in this franchise that they're willing to do that. And based on some of the contracts given out to players, I believe that there should be some interest from some team. I might not agree with that team's interest, but that's my prediction. And, you know, I just want to make clear, because there was this argument of, well, of course you give up, you know, guys like Harrison Barnes and Klay Thompson, they're not nearly as good as Dwight Howard, and that's true. But to me, it was a matter of with Dwight and just all the other crap attached to him, I don't want him to show up and just have no shooters around and have no team for him. It just seems like it's going to go poorly. So I do think that there's something to be said for having the right Dwight roster when you get him, because he might not be worth it if you get him and you don't have that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do think that I do think that the by keeping Klay or Barnes, you're going to have to move them eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Because Curry's contract, while great now, will not be great next time around.
Yeah.
It'll be a max deal next time around, and then you've got Dwight's max. Like, you don't have a lot of room with Iggy, Curry, and Dwight at bigger contracts in a couple of years, or, you know, 3 years from now. There's no flexibility there, so you kind of have to make a decision, and then you're going to have to offer extensions to Barnes and Thompson. That means you probably have to move them down the road, and are you going to maximize the value there, or, you know, are you able to get anything close to Dwight for those guys? Probably not. That's why, like, looking down the road, I thought in a few years, this is going to be your team anyway with Dwight, yeah. Iggy, Curry, so you might as well sell high now while you can. But at the same time, I understand, like, you do need to spread the floor. Iggy's not spreading the floor at all. I mean, I know he shot well 1 year from 3-point
range.
Yeah,
he had that 39% year. Well, I feel like with Iguodala, he's one of those dudes where it's not like Tony Allen. Somebody's going to go out to just close out on him, but he's also not a very good 3-point shooter.
Right.
And so that's one of the things I'm interested in next year. It almost felt as though there was a disease in Denver where guys couldn't shoot, or it seemed to be almost contagious. I want to see if he shoots better in this system, where he'll probably have more room. And I'm hopeful, but there isn't a whole lot to suggest that he will. I just want to see if it happens.
Yeah, I guess as long as he's like, if you can get him to like 36%, like, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. I just really want to see a whole lot of the Curry, Klay, Iguodala, Harrison Barnes, Bogut lineup. That seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Bogut starts off the running with either a block shot or a rebound kick out, and they just scoot down the floor, threes flying. That's what I want. That's what I want to see, and that's what I'm excited about. I'm not sure if the price for towards the future is a great one, just because two unprotected first round picks, that's a little bit scary. It's a little bit scary to be giving that up. And it's funny how people were saying, why did Utah do that? Well, they kind of didn't have to do anything, and they got two unprotected first round picks. That's not bad.
Right. That's not bad at all. So, all right, do you think Houston is the best chance for Dwight to win?
Yes. Yes,
why?
I do.
Why?
Well, we spoke of the issues of if he went to the Warriors, then we're not sure how much talent would be there for him when he got there.
Right.
Because of what they'd have to get for him. And for a digression, I really loved how the Warriors handled it, where they took themselves from having no shot and people wondering why they were going for him, and then creating this odd type of leverage where they had a good meeting with him. And then they said that, hey, we've cleared off the cap space, so we can sign him outright. And now it's up to you to trade him to us or have him just come to us through the signing. And to, you know, clear off that cap space, we'd have to get rid of all our great assets, but we're willing to do that. They created an interesting scenario that I really liked. But, of course, it was one where there just wouldn't be as much talent as is there right now if they got him. The Rockets, they don't really have to give up a whole lot to get him, you know? They can trade a Sheik for some other stuff, some other help. And there are shooters around there. You have two guys who you would probably say are favorites to be first team All-NBA with James Harden and Dwight Howard.
Sure.
I mean, my big fear with them is that they're just going to be so bad defensively that he can't compensate. That's one issue for the Rockets. But compared to the other rosters, I mean, compared to the Lakers, this is the big thing. The Lakers were essentially asking him to do an on-court red shirt. You know, they weren't competing for anything next year. They were saying, hey, stay in LA, get yelled at for the Lakers being bad and not being up to people's expectations for a year. And maybe we can talk LeBron into coming. We don't know if we can, but maybe we can. As opposed to just settling in with a team that can conceivably win a title next season, which I wouldn't predict that the Rockets would, but it is realistic. So, yeah, Houston, given all the options, that was the best one.
Oh, all right. Playing devil's advocate here. The Rockets, with everything clicking right for them last year, were as good as the Lakers with everything wrong for them.
Well, was everything wrong for them last year?
For the Lakers? Are you serious?
Yeah. I just keep hearing the Laker contingent harping on the injuries.
But the injuries, like the injuries exposed other problems, and then there was the coaching change, but the injuries were still Steve Nash missed a month and a half with a broken leg and never looked right coming back. Pau Gasol had mangled feet all year round. Kobe Bryant tears his Achilles, and not saying they would have pushed the Spurs at all in the playoffs, but that's why they look so bad, because they didn't have Kobe Bryant out there when they got swept. And then Dwight Howard was coming back from back surgery and tore the labrum in his shoulder, which I think it's safe to – I know you're a lot more dubious about the injuries than I am, but I think it's safe to assume Dwight Howard will be healthier next year than he was last year.
That would be my guess too. That would be my that seems probable that he would be that he would be more healthy.
And so let's just say Kobe Bryant is himself by January. And Steve Nash and Pau Gasol are relatively healthy all next year. Let's just say 68 games of health from them each. That seems as good as whatever the Rockets can muster to me now. Now, for the future, I get that the Rockets are a much better option. But for next year, I don't see that they're a better option than what the Lakers would have been able to provide, just because the Rockets, everything went right for them and they got the eighth seed. James Harden is, you know, he's better, you know, he's as good, I think, as you can expect Kobe Bryant to be. Like, James Harden is most likely a better player than Kobe Bryant next year because of the injuries. And even without the injuries, I know a lot of people, probably yourself included, would argue that James Harden is better. But they still have a point guard who isn't very good at feeding big men in Jeremy Lin. And I like Jeremy Lin, but you know, you just don't know that he and Howard are going to be a match. If they don't move Ashiq, you know, that's kind of a kerfuffle in the middle. And I don't know that their depth screams, yeah, we're a contender next year, especially when it looks like it usually takes these stars, you know, meeting up, you know, teaming up together in whatever fashion it happens. It takes them at least a year to kind of get used to each other.
Well, first of all, I believe that an Ashiq Howard situation would be more of an imbroglio than a kerfuffle.
Oh, an imbroglio.
Second of all. I think that 68 days of health sounds like just a delightful romantic comedy. Third of all, you're crazy, Zach. Of course they're going to be better. Kobe Bryant's Achilles is in tatters. Nobody comes back from that injury. I don't see what their future is. That was the biggest factor to me, was that Kobe Bryant tore his Achilles. And when we talk about stuff that went wrong for the Lakers, some of that stuff that went wrong for the Lakers does have an implication for this season, and that was one of the things. That's the main thing.
Are you saying if Kobe Bryant doesn't tear his Achilles, Dwight Howard resigns?
I think it's possible. Okay. I think that's a big factor.
I actually like that idea. Yeah, it's the Achilles that brought everything apart.
Yeah. Well, because you could potentially talk Dwight Howard into a situation where, hey, we just have to get on the right page. We have to get on the right page. Pau will be healthy. Nash will be healthy. You were getting better. You're going to be more healthy. We have a shot at this next year. You can't sell him on that if Kobe Bryant is trying to come back from an injury, as you know, I just said before, where it ruined Billups' career, it ruined Elton Brand's career. That's what he's trying to come back from. Yeah. That to me was, you know, if he was on the fence, that might have pushed him off of it.
What the Lakers should have done in their pitch is they should have had Kobe come into the room on crutches, and then right before he gets to his seat, he throws the crutches aside to Dwight, you know, Dwight would eat that up. You throw a smoke bomb on the ground or something, like do something.
Is there any doubt that Mark Jackson had him clapping and laughing and just loving it? in Mark Jackson's presentation.
I guarantee it. And then Kobe just like struts to his seat the final three steps or whatever. And maybe it kills him, maybe it hurts, but that's how you convince him, hey, I'm going to be fine.
I was thinking he could maybe burn the crutches.
That also could have worked. I know we got tidbits here and there about what the presentations were. I would have loved to see the presentations. Like, who used PowerPoint?
Oh,
who did it strictly on an iPad? Like, I would have.
It should have been on C-SPAN.
It really should have. That and then other teams should have had a chance to filibuster it.
That's what it sounded like was happening, with teams apparently telling Dwight Howard about James Harden being selfish and being just like Kobe and being a bad teammate. That was a little bit of a filibuster.
I feel like that would have been a plus. I would have said, they'd be like, hey, he's just like Kobe in these ways. And I'd be like, okay, so he's Kobe but 10 years younger? I'll take it. I'll go there.
Or the other way that they might have been going, where, oh, he just parties all the time.
Right.
Dwight's like, oh, that's terrible. I love how James Harden has made Houston seem cool just because that guy lives his life and is out of the strip clubs. We can say strip clubs on a podcast, yes. That's okay. Strip clubs.
There are pictures all over. Like, there are websites that dedicate picture time to James Harden's nightlife.
Oh, yeah. So we'll call them gentlemen's clubs.
Yeah, I would say it's out there.
Yeah. So I enjoy the James Harden way of being and how it put a particular spin on Houston, sure. A place that I don't think of as cool, but combined with the way James Harden lives and Slim Thug's brilliant pitch to Dwight Howard over Twitter, it gave Houston a kind of party atmosphere that we usually associate with L.A. and Miami.
God, I do kind of hope Slim Thug is the reason he signed.
Oh, yeah. He'll never admit it, but that pitch was solid.
Oh, it's great.
It covered so many bases, and he had to know about it. Dwight had to know about that pitch.
Oh, absolutely! I guarantee he did. So are the Rockets a contender next year? Because I am actually struggling with this, because is it because we don't know what is going to happen with the rest of the West, or is it they're that good?
You're a traditionalist, Zach, and I respect it. You try to not be swung by big events.
I don't disagree with the signing at all. It's clearly the right move for them. It's a great move. It's just, you know, looking at it takes a little while for the guys to get cohesive, and then they're still very young, and they do need a couple of pieces still. Like, I just wonder if they're actually contenders or if they're just knocking on the door of being a contender.
Well, in all likelihood, they won't win the championship next year, but they have a shot.
In your bold predictions.
Well, you know, there's this group of NBA teams that have a realistic shot at a title, and they are among those. I believe that's why Vegas has them at 10-1 right now.
Right.
That's a good shot. That's a team with a good shot of winning a title.
Yeah, that's all.
Thus a contender. But hey, you know, it's really hard to suss out that Western Conference, man. I mean, ranking those top six teams, it's like, why even bother? Because they're so close to each other that it almost doesn't matter, because so much will be determined by health and matchups. So they're in that group. They're in that group of teams who could do it, because all of those teams have a flaw. I mean, the Clippers' defense is a flaw for them, unless Doc Rivers can figure that out, unless he can coax something different out of DeAndre Jordan. The Thunder, they lost Kevin Martin. People aren't really paying attention to that, but how do they replace that bench scoring? How do they get that production back? He was very efficient for them, despite all the derision of what he did in the playoffs. The San Antonio Spurs, there's a lot of reason to believe in them, but of course they're old. They're super, super old. They might not have the same health they had last year. Man, I feel like I'm forgetting about a few teams. The Grizzlies,
Golden State Dubs.
Oh, I don't want to believe that much.
Oh, yes, you do. Yeah, you do.
I don't want to believe that much. That just seems, but yeah, they have the obvious injury flaw, right? That's a big one for them. And I don't know quite how David Lee fits in with this team still. That's an issue. That's the big awkward issue for the Warriors, is that they wildly exceeded expectations when David Lee got hurt. And how are they going to really figure that one out? It seems like he's almost their Rudy Gay. As Rudy was to Memphis.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Just came up with that one, Zach.
well, that's an exclusive.
That's an exclusive analogy.
That's an Ion Basketball podcast exclusive. Oh, now I know what to make the headline.
So, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a team in this crazy war between, between all the
contenders. You started mentioning the Grizzlies before I cut you off. Grizzlies are they're there, right?
Yeah, you know, Grizzlies are there.
They're a good team.
You know.
They're a good team, right?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I mean, they haven't addressed a single need this offseason, but they're a good team.
Yeah, they kind of lost their coach and didn't really fix the whole thing where, you know, teams can just do a prayer circle in the paint for defense on them. A little campfire around the paint.
Yeah.
They haven't really fixed that.
Yeah, but they're contenders, I'm sure.
That's the defense that will be also employed against the Detroit Pistons as well, where it's basically, you know what's going to happen? It's going to be in the pregame where everybody's in that circle and they have their hand in, and they're doing their kind of their pump-up thing. The team that plays the Pistons will be doing that throughout the game, not only before the game, but also in the paint. What time is it? Game time. Woot. They're just doing that all the time on defense against the Pistons.
Just from one lower block to the other. Just going back and forth, rotating.
As Josh Smith airballs three-pointers.
That's a weird – it's funny to me. Do we know who Detroit's coach is? I don't remember this. I feel like they hired somebody, right?
Did they? Did they hire a guy? I know Lawrence Frank's no longer there.
Yeah.
God, this makes me feel like not a professional. I'm drawing a total blank on it.
I'm looking it up right now.
Did they bring Michael Curry back?
They brought in Maurice Cheeks. That's what they did.
Oh, yes. Maurice Cheeks.
All right, Mo Cheeks is a guy. He's been around.
He can sing a national anthem.
Yeah. Was he ever very rookie friendly? I know he's not a rookie anymore, but everyone, like Josh Smith gets signed to the Pistons, and people are like, oh, he can play the three. I'm like, I don't know that they're going to start Andre Drummond right away.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, even in the second year. Like, they should. I think they should get that chemistry as much as they could between Monroe and Drummond. Yeah, you're probably going to lose, but God, if you can get those two on the same page to where they're playing off of each other next year, you're going to be great. And so the idea is like, oh, yeah, Drummond at the center, Monroe at power forward, Josh Smith at small forward. Like, that's probably just going to be Monroe at center, Josh Smith at power forward. That's what it's probably going to be, right?
You know, I don't hate that signing if they move Greg Monroe. And I kind of think they should. I don't think they will.
Yeah, I don't think they will either. But Greg Monroe's very good. He's going to be an all-star, I think, probably multiple times.
He's very good, but I just think that bigs who aren't good at defense, and it's hard for me to see how Monroe will be, that they're overvalued and that you should perhaps trade them to a team that overvalues them for parts. And he's really young. He's really shiny. I could see them getting some of the perimeter help they need by trading him. So that would be...
They really need perimeter help.
Yeah.
That's a bad perimeter.
Yeah. They make make Memphis look... they make Memphis look like the Miami Heat on the perimeter.
They really do.
So they kind of need to make a move. That's why I don't get why they did it, because I don't think they will make that move. It's unclear to me as to why they would give Josh Smith a lot of money. That's what happens in free agency all the time. It seems as though the teams that don't need to do things are the ones doing things.
What's funny is, all right, Josh Smith, last time he was a free agent, he was restricted. He signed an offer sheet with Memphis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Atlanta matched it?
I believe that's the history
would
of it.
Was that when Pau Gasol was still on the team?
Right? Man, I don't remember. I just don't.
Or close enough?
Yeah, I feel like my... You're putting me on the spot. I'm revealing that I don't know who the coach of the Pistons is.
What's great is by me asking the questions, it absolves me of any knowledge.
Yeah, you're just the interrogator.
Yeah, I'm just interrogating you. But all right,
who won the championship in 1974? It's like, oh, God.
I think it's the Celtics. I don't know. I usually guess Celtics if it's pre.
God, I hope that's not the one Warriors championship.
That's 75.
I know.
Let's just say that had happened and the Hawks don't match. Is Zach Randolph ever a Renaissance project?
You love your renaissances.
Oh,
your,
I do. I can't
your
wait.
Jordan Crawford Renaissance. That's still happening. You can see. That's it looked like the Dark Ages to everybody else but Zach.
All I heard were flutes and people being merry about eating turkey legs and speaking in old English every time like he put up a 20-footer.
I blame your Scottish roots for making anything else seem highfalutin.
Every step back jumper is a bagpipes.
As Zach cheers at Amel chewing on his mutton leg.
Oh, I love me some mutton leg. And some haggis. Nothing better than stuffed intestine.
Yeah.
Zach Randolph. Wonder if Zach Randolph is ever the positive influence he became.
I don't think he will be. That's another guy. Hey, I'm a little extreme, perhaps, on this position where I like defensive bigs. I like defensive bigs. I loved Zach Randolph was amazing two playoffs ago. And you want to get that back, but he's older. He's on the tail end of his prime, and they should go forward in a different direction, especially now they fired their coach, of building the team around Marc Gasol and Mike Conley.
But do you think all of the bigs involved need to be defensive bigs, or can you put Greg Monroe next to Andre Drummond, assuming Drummond is the defensive force that a lot of people think he'll be, including myself? And can you put Zach Randolph next to Marc Gasol, who is the best defender this past year? Can you do that and make it a complementary situation, or do both bigs need to be defensive?
Man, I'm just so confused. Who won the championship in 1975? There are just so many names going on, so many bigs, so many defense-offense concerns to figure out here. I think it's possible. I think it's possible to have the one good defensive big mitigate the problems with the bad one. But
it's just the bad one has to be that good. On the other end, right?
Yeah. I think that yes, that's the thing. They have to be that good on the other end. I just remember talking myself into how Bogut would fix everything that was wrong with David Lee, and so I believe that my philosophy has been perhaps too formed by that experience.
Oh, okay.
You know, and that's what's happened to me, but I do think it's possible. But you know, I'm all about this spreading the floor thing. I don't think you need two bigs necessarily or two traditional bigs, and I like the direction the league is moving. And it's actually kind of my issue with Indiana. I don't really love how they're saying everybody has to adjust to us. We're not going to adjust to them. My position is, hey, maybe the Pacers should have some versatility. Maybe they shouldn't be so all in on a very super traditional lineup, which is one of the reasons why I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of the David West signing, I get why they did it.
But he's a guy that can hit from like 20 feet, so
yeah,
can't he stretch the floor enough? Yeah,
he can definitely on a pick and roll, pick and pop, he can do that a little bit. I just mean in general, where wouldn't you want to kind of go small a little bit sometimes just to shake it up with Paul George at the four, you know, as kind of a bench lineup? Wouldn't you want to do that? It's weird to me that they never do that.
Yeah, I guess the less dribbling he has to do against perimeter defenders, the better.
You and your you hate Paul George.
I don't hate, I just, like, the guy...
Hate him.
The guy can't dribble and create consistently. And so until he can do that, I'm not going to say, like, yeah, this guy is, he's one of the top 15 players in the league. Like, I just don't believe it.
Yeah, well, with him, it's confusing because when he does do it, it feels like it's something that he has command over and something he should do all the time.
Right, and then the rest of the time he's dribbling a football.
Yes.
That's the part that bugs me. If he did that all the time, I would love him.
He's dribbling an oblong ball, but not with the facility of the Australian rules football guys when they're doing those runs. Have you ever seen that? It's amazing.
Oh, have I ever? I've been to the finals, my friend.
It's crazy. They get on a run. They're sprinting. They just bounce it like a basketball.
Oh,
I don't
great.
Know how they do that.
It's all in the balance.
Ah, yes.
It's knowing the angles.
Well,
I could talk Aussie rules football all day.
Yes, you could, and that's your other podcast. You know, I think that you should keep it I think you should keep it separate, Zach. Sure. And not have it seep into this.
What would that be? The pitch and roll?
The pitch and roll.
Pitch and roll podcast?
Yes, the pitch and roll podcast. You guys can all check that out. It's also on the CBS Aussie Rules football. He has Andrew Bogut as a regular guest to break it down. I suggest you guys all give that a listen.
Yeah,
it's
fantastic. The Patty Mills question of the week.
The Patty Mills question of the week, indeed. But where do we return to, Zach, after we've been getting into this whole idea of how does your front court operate? Is it possible, getting back to Detroit, is it possible that that monstrosity works?
Yes, but not with the current backcourt.
Yeah. So you're not a Brandon Knight believer?
Not as a point guard. I'd like him as a six man.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good scorer. I think he could score as a six man, kind of Jason Terry-ish.
Yeah.
Probably more J.R. Smith-ish than Jason Terry-ish, but I just like he's not running a team very well.
Yeah. No, I think it's kind of doomed. But this whole idea of how necessary point guards are is interesting to me, where people are wringing their hands over the Warriors losing Jarrett Jack. And my opinion on it is you have a lot of available backup point guards.
So anti point guard.
I don't know if I'm anti point guard. I just believe that there are fewer bad point guards than there are bad big men. And because, hey, there are a lot more talented short people than there are talented tall people, to really be reductive about it. So
I think we've seen, though, that a good backup point guard is actually highly valuable.
He can be valuable, but when Jarrett Jack was asking the Warriors for $8 million a year...
Oh, that's insane, yeah.
My opinion was you can pay somebody so much less... do that job a little bit worse.
Yeah, and, like, I'm not a Darren Collison fan.
Yeah.
But him getting, you know, what is it, $2 million a year to join the Clippers as the backup point guard, that's a brilliant signing.
Oh, yeah. The Warriors' problem right now is that Iguodala trade, it's not that they lost Jarrett Jack, it's that the Iguodala trade has tied them up as they're waiting for a sign-in trade and waiting until Wednesday to know if that goes down and how that goes down. And all the other backup point guards are getting snapped up for reasonable prices as they wait for that to be processed.
Right.
So that's their big problem. And still, I think that you could find somebody. You can maybe find somebody over from Europe. You can do what the Rockets did, where they paid Patrick Beverley $300,000 last year to be nearly as good as Jarrett Jack was this year.
Yeah. Let me throw some names at you.
Okay.
If DJ Augustine ends up being the backup point guard for the Warriors, are you happy?
Not particularly, but I'll understand.
Aaron Brooks.
Okay.
Oh, you could get into Aaron Brooks.
Well, my feeling on this is that you just don't need as much of these guys as you got from Jarrett Jack last year, because Andre Iguodala is going to be somewhat your backup point guard. He's going to fill some of that role. And so... I don't need these guys to be fantastic. I just need them to be able to, I don't know, jog up and down the court.
Ben Hasbro. Ben Hansbro, I'm sorry. Ben Hansbro.
I know Beckley would be very happy about that.
Beckley would be all over it.
Yeah. I don't know if I would.
What about... God, there really aren't many... AJ Price. AJ Price would be a nice pickup.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. That's fine. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with them bringing Charles Jenkins back somehow.
Yeah. He's restricted. I can't imagine it would take much to grab him.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he's fielding a whole bunch of offers, but he's used to playing a backup point guard role for them. I don't get why he only shoots long twos, and you know he makes a lot of them, but it's a very curious style that he has. But I'd be fine with that, you know?
Yeah.
The thing with Jarrett Jack is I think that hurts you more in the regular season than it does in the playoffs. In the playoffs, they had too much Jarrett Jack.
Right.
They had too much Jarrett Jack, and it was kind of, even though his numbers, his efficiency numbers were good, it was a disaster. And there's a reason why they were in the negative point differential when he was on the floor in the playoffs. He dribbled way too much. He committed turnovers at terrible times, and he also had terrible turnovers, just inexplicable turnovers. And I'm, as much as I love Jarrett Jack as somebody to talk to, and his quotes were fantastic, I don't think he was vital to the mission.
I do. He is one of those things where you'll talk to somebody about how bad he was, in the playoffs, and then, and someone's like, no, his numbers were this, this, and this, and you're like, what?
Yeah,
I don't remember that. And it's one of those things of, it's one of those watch the games arguments where you're like, no, I know what I saw. Like, I know what the numbers are telling me here, but I know I saw him screw multiple key.
There were so many. Somebody should do a supercut of how many times he almost threw away and created just historic collapses in that playoffs. It happened at least three times. It really did. And it actually hurt them against the Spurs in game one. It was sort of a big deal where he had two what-was-he-doing defensive lapses. I mean, that's the other thing with Jarrett Jack, too, is you know, whoever you replace him with is probably going to be a better defender, even if they're not going to be as good at offense.
Right.
Because he just doesn't know where screens are coming from. He doesn't see it. He has no peripheral vision. And so that would be my hope. I mean, hey, you could have Kent Bazemore fill in a little bit for him. I have no idea if Kent Bazemore can play point guard or not. No clue. But at least I know that Kent Bazemore will be much better on defense than Jarrett Jack was.
I do like Kent. I'm excited for him. He's going to be on the Warriors summer league team, right?
Oh yeah, I'm excited.
He was fun. I summer league last year. He was a guy I walked away with. Like, I don't know if he's good, but that guy's athletic and fun.
He's got crazy wingspan. His wingspan, I believe, I'd have to look it up. I believe his wingspan is longer than Blake Griffin's.
Wow.
And maybe Kevin Love's. And he's somebody who might be listed as a point guard. So yeah, that's some fun. Some fun wingspanning.
I don't believe you now.
Why don't you believe me?
I'm looking this up. Well, you threw Kevin Love's name in there.
Okay. Well, I said maybe. I gave it the modifier.
They don't list his wings. Oh, yes, they do. His wingspan is 6'11 and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts.
Oh, wow. It is. It's more than Kevin Love's wingspan. 6'11, 6'11 and a quarter.
There are a few things I've been happier about than this moment right now. Take that, Zach. Kevin Love with his puny wingspan.
Blake Griffin's exact same.
Yep.
Wow. You learn something new every day.
You learn something new and probably useless every day.
I still don't actually believe it. I still don't actually believe it.
Well, you can, I don't know, you can find out if you're gonna be at Summer League, right?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll measure it myself.
Yeah, come with your measuring tape. I'm sure that won't be awkward in the slightest. But yes, I am excited. I am excited for Warriors Summer League with Harrison Barnes and with Kent Bazemore. That seems like a fun donkey kind of team.
Yeah, it does seem fun.
I'm also excited for I was interested in Steven Adams because I think that few 12th picks have ever had more pressure on them than Steven Adams. And so I want to look into what he was doing. I did a Google search, and the story pops up, and it says, Steven Adams looks sharp in Thunder debut.
Okay.
And then I start reading it, and it says, I mean, I the 12th overall pick out of Pittsburgh, he scored 2 points on 1-4 shooting with 6 rebounds. So I just love Summer League for the everything's positive, everything shades positively tenor to it.
That's the thing. I'm going to be at the Vegas Summer League for the entire time, which that'll be interesting.
I feel like that's a euphemism for drunk. But continue.
No, it's just going to be that's a long time to be in Las Vegas.
Oh yeah.
Like that's not even like I'll be partying the whole time kind of thing. Like that's just a long time to be in that city. Like that city has a weird aura around it.
I'm protecting myself from it. I don't know how, but I'm going to I'm gonna try to not let it seep into my skin.
Yeah.
I probably won't gamble. I just have no love for the gambling. Just nothing.
Well, especially
nothing in me wants to do it.
Yeah, if you're there for like 60 hours, that's when you're like, yeah, I'll gamble a little bit, I'll do this, do that. But 11 days, I'm just like, ugh, I don't even want to, I probably won't even want to leave my hotel room after the fourth day.
Oh, you're not going to be next to a Lamar Odom at the pool?
No, I find that very unlikely. Although I do expect Lamar and I to have the same workout program while we're there. But that's like, I have to like start thinking about like coverage for Summer League and stuff on the right. And I know a lot of it's just going to come across as like really positive. This guy could be great. This guy could be great kind of thing. And I don't know that I believe any of it, but that's the kind of,
you know, it'd be so funny, Zach.
That's the attitude Summer League gives you though. It's like, oh, look at this guy performing and game situations he'll never face again, and he succeeded, kind of.
You know, it'd be so funny if you just wrote a story about how some guy would suck based on the things he sucks at. Some guy who's not very good. You know, he was undrafted.
Kent Bazemore is never going to get a max contract in this league.
No, not even that. Not even that, because Kent Bazemore could conceivably play in the league. But some guy who's just hanging on, and we know he's not going to make it, and you just write this very easy. The way certain people will rip Dwight Howard and call him a loser, but just for a guy who's actually not going to play in the league. And, you know, just cruel and mean about some guy nobody's heard about. That's my suggestion for you this summer.
That'll be easy to pitch to my editors too. Like, hey, this guy we've never heard of, I'm gonna rip him.
This guy's not going anywhere. Well, is he a hard worker? Yeah, he's a hard worker. He just sucks.
Yeah, that's the thing. I should just spend the first half of it building up this guy's, like, he's a workhorse. He'll do whatever it takes to put in the work. Oh, by the way, it will never matter because he's not talented. He's
not zero talent. He's not good at basketball. Maybe for like a guy on Earth, he's pretty good. Yeah, not right. not for a pro. He's just wasting everybody's time. In fact, even though this guy's a hard worker, you should resent him at some level because he's wasting everybody's time.
I am interested in the who was it? Oh, I think your own Scott Machado.
Oh.
He was a summer league favorite last year because he's a point guard.
Maybe he'll be the backup point guard.
Maybe. But that was the thing, like, people were incensed that Machado hadn't, like, locked up a roster spot and locked up a borderline starting position with an NBA team based on his college career and his summer league performance. And I do wonder who is going to be this year's Scott Machado.
Oh yeah. I do wonder. I wonder with Machado if his name played a role in it. You know, it's one of those really good names. It sounds like a UFC fighter name.
Yeah,
Scott Machado.
Yeah.
You know, it's Brazilian.
Don't let Scott Machado take you to the mat.
No, you
keep
can't.
Him upright. You got to keep him upright.
Yeah, Scott Machado, man. You can't stick your chin out against Scott Machado, or you'll have what happened to Silva. You just can't do that.
I have no idea what you just said.
I don't know. The Silva went down, and Twitter was all about it, and I don't know anything about UFC fighting. I think some guy named Weedman beat him, and I just for a second I was interested in UFC because I was looking up whether or not this guy was Jewish, and then it turned out he wasn't, and then I lost interest again.
Maybe the headline for this podcast should just be, hey, why don't you Google that for us?
Yes.
We've come with very little information about a lot of topics.
A lot of topics, whether they be Aussie rules football, you know, the UFC, or the NBA.
Or the NBA. Any of those.
Any of those. We're just in a sea of dark.
Yeah.
We see the world like those fish at the bottom of the ocean, and that means not very well.
Oh, what about Mo Williams?
Oh.
Mo Williams should be a warrior. He's a Warriors type of player.
I like it because he can shoot. People have been asking me about that one. I like it. It's one of those things where all your ideas sound good, everybody. They just can't do anything till Wednesday.
All right. Are you pro-moratorium?
Pro-atorium? I don't know. Well, what do you mean? What kind of moratorium?
Like the free agency moratorium we have.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not pro.
No, I'm not just talking about it in general. I'm just talking about not any moratorium, just the NBA's free agency moratorium.
Yeah, just that one.
I get why it's necessary. You got to, you know, you got to get the books in order, figure out what everyone can. But I don't know, 10 days, I feel like they could get that done during the draft.
It's a little, I don't want to call it unfair because you know what you're getting into when you make these deals.
Yeah.
But it is annoying to me that it's just about the moratorium. That's the reason probably why the Warriors can't make these moves that other teams are making. I don't like that from a very selfish perspective. But you might be a fan of it if you're a fan of the, say, Clippers or one of these teams that's snapping up these available guards, and the Warriors can't get in on it. So I guess that benefits your team, and you might like it this time around.
Yeah, that's true. God, the Clippers. So, I am all in on this Clippers team.
Oh, they're good. I don't know how they're going to guard. I don't know how they're going to defend necessarily, but I do love a lot of what's there. They're going to be fun. They're going to, you know what they are? They're very much like the mid-2000 Suns in roster construction.
Oh, I like that.
You know, they've got the big guy who can deliver some power dunks. I mean, DeAndre Jordan or Blake Griffin, they aren't Amare at that stage, but there's a little bit of that. And they have the perimeter shooting, they have the point guard running things. They don't have a whole lot in terms of defense.
Right.
But they'll be able to sling threes all around. It should be really, really fun.
And really, they just have to be a top 13 defense.
Yeah. Yeah. They can be so offensively proficient, they don't need to be great at defense. Yeah.
But, I mean, in the playoffs, that'll change a little bit.
It will. Well, who's your favorite then? Who's your favorite out of the West? You've been avoiding everything, Zach. You've been interrogating, you've been asking your questions, you've been doing the from speed, the pop quiz, hot shot, you've been doing that, throwing that at me. Who is the favorite in the West? Give me an answer.
The favorite in the West is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Even though they lost Kevin Martin. The Kevin Martin.
I think they will find a way to replace him in a way that we can't even fathom right now. I think they will find a way. It will not be Steven Adams.
They cloned him.
They cloned him. He signed. The clone signs for half of what he gets with another team.
It's so smart.
Yeah,
it's just creating value.
Yeah, it's creating great value. The clone won't be able to read. But that's
the clone is just very confused by everything happening.
Clone's very confused, but you tell him to shoot. And he shoots.
He's already a better defender, though.
He's already a better defender. I think they're gonna find a way to supplement the attack there. And I just think Westbrook and Durant are that good. They're that good.
That's probably where I'd go. I think Durant's so great, and they just in that core of Ibaka, Durant, Westbrook. That's enough. That's enough.
Yeah,
I like that.
If I had to rank the contenders in the West. I would go Thunder, Spurs, Clippers, Rockets. Is there another team? Warriors, I guess.
I'd go Warriors over Grizz.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think if I actually believe there are more than four contenders.
Man, I think it's conceivable. I mean,
I'm still back with the Warriors if they're healthy. And it's not even a Curry thing. It's just Bogut's got to be healthy.
Yeah, Bogut's the huge thing. I mean. It's the big if.
But he doesn't even really have to be healthy until the playoffs, though.
Yeah, I just want the two of those guys healthy in the playoffs and through the playoffs, and that's a huge advantage, but that's a giant, giant if.
Yeah. Well, that was the problem just as a Timberwolves fan when there was a discussion of can you win with Pekovic and Kirilenko making so much because they missed so much time, and I just thought... You really just need them healthy for the playoffs. And I know that this isn't a playoff team yet, or at least they weren't. They haven't been for a while. But
they could easily be next year.
Yeah, exactly. They could easily be next year. And it was like, they could miss 20 games. As long as none of those games happen in the playoffs, who cares?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's like that with the Warriors where I think that as long as they get to the playoffs, then I just want them to get there. I just want them to get there. Home court advantage is great, but they're not such a great team that you can just pencil in the playoffs. They're not that. And they are good enough in terms of their talent and perhaps how top heavy it is with just those two where you can hope that they win a playoff series or two if they have those guys healthy. So they're just in a weird spot with their whole, you know, injury prone and Bogut/Curry dynamic. So, yeah. I don't know. I'm optimistic. I probably shouldn't be, but it just feels as though the Warriors are far more competent than they've been in the past. And I'm just happy. I'm just happy to have a good team to watch. I don't need to actually think they're going to do anything.
Well, that's,
I just like construction.
That's where I got with the Timberwolves. Like they re-signed Chase Budner. They signed Kevin Martin, which means Kirilenko is most likely gone unless they can pull off a miracle between now and Wednesday. And T-Wolves fans are freaking out, like, how are we going to defend? How are we going to defend? I'm like, I don't really care. I just want to see a good, a good, fun team. Like, you have to get to a point, like, you have to make the playoffs before you can start adding pieces as a playoff team. No matter how good and talented you think the roster is, like, they didn't make the playoffs last year because of injuries. Now you have to adjust. You have to establish yourself before you can start, you know, bringing in the free agents you want every time. And I just, like, if the Timberwolves get to the playoffs as an 8 seed and are fun in the first round before they lose, that's good enough for me right now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I just, you want to see a fun team that matters in April.
And it's just fun not to be part of the tanking brigade, you know?
Sure.
I think that that's a good thing as well. That drives me crazy. I don't know how you feel about the whole tanking deal. It's this whole controversial topic that people argue about. I'm starting to get... I know there are more people in our demo who are angry about the pervasiveness of tanking talk than actually they are about tanking. But I'm angry about tanking. I don't like that it's just going unfixed and the NBA is trudging along, because it seems as though it's more prevalent than ever before, because you have more of these GMs who are willing to do it and are saying, hey, we're doing a full rebuild, and they're pitching that to their owner. It just seems as though we have a whole lot of tanking, especially next year. And it's utter BS to have these teams where the objective is to lose. It's one thing when you're saying, hey, to rebuild, we might lose some games. You know, we're going to have to lose some games to rebuild. It's another thing when losing games is the objective and the goal of the rebuild.
I have many thoughts on this. I have no problem with tanking, because under the current construction of how the league is, tanking has its benefits.
Yeah, no, I want to make that clear. I'm not blaming the teams. I'm blaming the league for the incentives.
Yeah, as long as the rules are the way they are, I have no problem with the team tanking. I would prefer if the lottery was unweighted and just 1 through 14 had the exact same shot.
Oh, we've never been more in agreement.
Yes, that's how I want the lottery to be. It's not, so whatever. Like, I think you're dumb if you're not tanking in this setup. Like, you should either be moving towards a title or you should be tanking.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that, and especially like with the loaded draft class that is allegedly coming up, you know, now is the time to tank more than ever. And so I'm fine with that. The problem I have with tanking is that teams won't admit it. Like, you can still say, hey, our guys are going out there and we want them to play as hard as they can. We're going to try, you know, we're going to give them every opportunity to play how they want to play and to play for wins on their level. It's just that it's going to be hard for them because we're only putting out a certain level of product in an effort to, you know, to prepare for the future and to try to get one of these incoming, you know, phenoms. And so I think if teams were just like up front and said, we're not, like, I guess tanking is such a bad word now that you can't come out and say we're tanking. I think you should be able to come out and say, yeah, we're looking more towards the future than we are the present.
We're shaving points.
Yeah, we're shaving points.
We're shaving points.
Because tanking, like, people, like, the players on the teams that are tanking are never trying to tank. They don't want to get replaced by a younger player.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that's what I don't like about it, though, is that it creates this really bad dynamic where there are these conflicting goals. And it's a little depressing. It was a little depressing when half the Warriors arena was cheering for a loss and half was cheering for a win when they were trying to get that that seventh protected pick years ago.
Were the group of fans that booed the Monte Ellis trade, were those the fans cheering for a loss? Because that makes more sense to me now.
No, because I think that the fans cheering for a loss were the ones who were smart enough to get that Monte might not have been the greatest player.
But
it was depressing. It was depressing to be around there. It was depressing to see Mark Jackson in his first year as a coach in this impossible position where the management really wants him to lose and he has to go out there and he wants to prove himself and win. It sucks. It's really not a great circumstance, and the league could fix it a variety of ways. They could do it, and to throw up your hands and say, well, you know, one solution creates another problem, that's not very constructive. That's not using your head. I don't know why I'm lecturing people that way, but but come on, the league should fix this. This is a joke. This makes the NBA look like some sort of a third world league.
I mean,
if you will.
I hate the idea of parody. I think it is. I just think it's stupid for professional sports to try to encourage parody. I think that if you can properly run a team, then you end up having success. Like I've never bought into. I think it matters to a certain degree with like the Lakers in that market, but I've never bought into like big market is the reason there isn't parity in the NBA. Like no, it's just it's good ownership and good management.
Well, it's also
ownership.
That there are so few players who matter. I mean that's really. I mean I'm writing about this right now, and it's sort of why I'm pessimistic about the Lakers' future. And I keep getting into arguments on Twitter about it. Is that it's not that I think the Lakers suck and that they're bad at doing things. There are just very few players who have an impact, and now they have none. You know,
they have
Kobe Bryant and tattered Achilles, and just cap space. And there's no guarantee that that corrects itself because there's a finite amount of impact talent in the league. You look at most of the guys, if you do the NBA rank top 20, and almost nobody is available over the next few years, save for the guy on your team. Who should be available in 2015, and I don't know how that's going to work out. But then you're in a position where you just have to hope somebody signs there when you don't already have something to attract that player. So I just think it's more about how top-heavy the league is in terms of talent than the whole big market, small market thing.
Yeah, I just don't buy into it. Because you know, the Clippers were a perfect example. As long as they wanted to just care about making money and not care about the product, that's what they did.
Yeah.
And somehow you've convinced Donald Sterling to try to have a winning philosophy, and so far it's working. But
I almost wonder if that convincing is really more that he's old and he's 80 years old and other people are running things.
Yeah, I mean that's mainly got to be it, right?
That he just doesn't know. He doesn't know what's happening.
Right.
I think that that's that's sad. That's a really bad. That reflects on how bad your owner is. Where him just being out to lunch and not being involved results in a much better operation.
Right. That's actually a lot of teams could benefit from that.
We're over an hour, Zach. I are we ever going to get to your whole complaints about the Batman franchise as a movie franchise? Because I know that some people want to hear that.
Yeah, we could do that in like 10 minutes, right?
I don't want to force you into a segue, but you know, I kind of do.
Here's the thing about the latest three Batman movies. What is it? Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm.
The more I watch these movies and the more I pick them apart, the more that Batman Begins is the best of the three.
Agreed.
The problem is that the last two movies are really three movies. There wasn't enough content for a third movie, or there was too much for the two movies, but they just threw stuff into those. And it really destroys the rhythm of the movie. It destroys the story. Like the whole Harvey Dent angle could have been its own movie that would have bridged us from The Dark Knight to The Dark Knight Rises. And that would have been a better way to go about it than just like having him go nuts for the final 35, 40 minutes.
It made no sense also why Batman had to do that and had to frame himself. That just made no sense.
Right. It made absolutely no sense. Like
I know somebody who's really up on the comics can perhaps lecture me about why it made sense and the themes within it, but it seemed to be just really an irrational choice.
And that's where I'll disagree with you. The people who are up on the comics can go kick rocks because I don't need you throwing your if I gave a damn about the comics and what they say, I would go read the comics instead of watching the movie.
Yeah.
A movie is an adaptation of a book or a comic or whatever, but it's an adaptation. So at that point, you lose me with, well, in the comics, this is where it says this. I don't care. I'm talking about the movie.
Yes. You're talking about practice.
Yes.
Or the movie.
Right.
And
the movie matters.
My thing with this is that we have this lower bar when it comes to these comic book movies where I have an inability to abstract or to suspend disbelief. It's just not in my nature. So I see all these inconsistencies when I watch these movies, and people go to me, well, you know, it's a comic book. It's a comic book movie. You can't you can't have these concerns. But yes, I can. I'm just seeing all these flaws and all these contradictions and all these things that don't make sense. It screws things up for me. It screws things up for me when I'm watching The Dark Knight Rises and I see that Christian Bale can't make this jump out of the darkened prison into this rock, into this ledge. But Marion Cotillard, as a 9-year-old girl, or however old she was, because she had, I don't know, what did she do? Not have a rope attached to her?
She didn't have a rope around her waist.
She didn't have a rope around her waist. So she's able, and this goes back to my wingspan obsession. It's like, what does she have? Kent Bazemore's wingspan that as a 9-year-old girl, you know, just because she has the fear of not having the rope, she's able to find the ledge, and Christian Bale can't as a man, as a grown man? Come on.
Not just a grown man, but he is incredibly athletic.
Incredibly athletic, despite whatever happened to his body.
I don't think she had the strength grip.
Yes.
To do what she did as a 9-year-old child.
And you know, for Bale being able to do that once he didn't have the rope, if you had explained to him that Marion Cotillard as a 9-year-old girl had done it, I'm sure he would have been so depressed that he couldn't manage it.
He couldn't have saved Gotham, and I'm really just sick of everyone going after Gotham.
Yeah, why do people care?
If Bane put this attack on London, would Batman have been there? Would he have given a damn? Or is he only there to protect a city
that's very provincial?
That really, honestly, Gotham
he's
doesn't...
He's a big xenophobe. He doesn't like anywhere else.
Gotham doesn't sound that pleasing.
It's not, and that's my other problem with this whole franchise, even though I do like Batman Begins, is everyone's so glum. Everyone's so dour. There aren't many jokes. You know, Hathaway was providing some comedy at least. There's some lighthearted banter. And we're talking about this, to be clear. It might seem out of place. It is on premium cable constantly right now.
All the time.
You can catch up and you can see all the various inconsistencies. Right now on premium cable, in the NBA doldrums, we have that. We have action movies from the 90s. There's just a ton of Speed, a ton of Point Break, a ton of Heat. You know, those shoot 'em ups are flooding, you know, those channels for whatever reason. And yeah, I don't get why it's so glum in Gotham. A lot of what happened seems implausible. Cotillard playing the long con. And by the way, I would like to say that she has never looked more lovely than when she's stabbing Christian Bale in the kidney. She just looks beautiful when she's doing that. It's a very I'm sure Bale felt very ambivalent, or the character felt very ambivalent in that moment, but that part's unrealistic to me. I don't know what Bane's motivation is. I don't get why everything's so extravagant that he does, where he's hijacking this airplane to destroy it. It's just they need to simplify. They need to make things a little simpler and a little more lighthearted, just a little more fun. These movies aren't fun.
And I've said it a lot. I'll be happy to say it again. I really believe that the only reason The Dark Knight became as acclaimed as it did and he got the award is because Heath Ledger died.
Yeah.
I really don't think it would have been as hyped. Like, it was almost like, oh, he died for this role. And however he died, like, that's an awful thing and it doesn't really matter. But I do think it colors the way we remember what that movie. Like, that movie, he's very good in it.
Yes.
He's very good, but it also, once you find out that he's basically doing a Tom Waits impersonation from 1979, like, it kind of it is like there is like there's
with a little clown voice thrown in there
but
I don't think Waits would be so clownish, you know. What is he building in there?
But that's essentially what he's doing. So, like, it became less original once that video of that, like, 1979 Tom Waits interview circled around. It was like, oh, that's where he got it. Oh, that's really cool. Oh, it's not as original, is it? And maybe there's some artistic leap there with turning...
I enjoyed the Joker. I just thought everything going around it, right down to the Batman voice that Bale does, that just seems like
that's awful.
He's a sex line caller. It's just kind of a drag, and the movies are very long and, you know, way too complicated considering the inconsistencies and the big plot holes.
Yeah, you really could have, like, the Joker storyline was good enough.
Very heavy-handed. I get it. He makes a joke out of existence. He makes a joke out of life. I get it. I understand. It's clear.
Yeah.
It keeps being clear. He's just making things chaotic. That's his motivation.
I think the second scene he's in or whatever with the magic trick with the pencil.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant scene. As much as we rip it up, that's a great, great scene.
Where does he get all these goons, though? Where does the Joker have all these goons at his disposal? He seems like a loner. Is there a classifieds ad?
He's the Daryl Morey of goons. He is stockpiling assets, flipping them for higher goons. I mean, that's what that whole scene with the cue stick.
Yeah.
He breaks that. And he's got three guys to fight over it. That's how you acquire assets.
Well, it's as though he's got hundreds of guys who are willing to put themselves in harm's way for the Joker.
They're all terrified of him.
But you never see him hang. He doesn't have a right hand man. It seems quite unrealistic. I mean, even Jack Nicholson in The Departed as Frank Costello had a right hand man. You need one guy. You need somebody. How does he have nobody?
Which, I mean, that's interesting you would use that reference because Jack was the Joker.
Yes.
Whose Joker do you like more, Heath's or Jack's?
Ooh, I would go Heath, I suppose. I mean, Jack's was a little more clowny, you know? Yeah,
I think I would go Heath too, but I think it's a lot closer than a lot of people want to admit.
Yeah. And frankly, the character that Jack Nicholson portrayed could have been a Joker-esque character as well. He probably could have done a similar performance. He's just too old for it.
With Frank Costello?
Yeah, with Frank Costello. Oh, there's a Whitey Bulger.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Or Bulger or whatever. I don't know. I mean, one of them is a Boston gangster, one of them is some sort of grain that, you know, is a little bit like quinoa if you're sick of quinoa and you want to lose weight. So sure. One of those.
I do think that, and also, like, the Batman voice was really bad in all of them, and it got progressively worse. And I get it, he can't have the same voice as Bruce Wayne, so, like, you know, I don't need explanations for this stuff. I'm telling you the problems with it. I don't need you to explain it. I know what the explanations are. I just don't agree with them.
It'd be better if he talked like a human, I'm just saying. But, I know nobody in the Batman, no Batman fanboy, that's like when somebody says that soccer shouldn't have offsides as a non-soccer fan. You're going to freak out.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to take anything seriously when that's happening.
And Bane's voice is ridiculous. it's auto-tuned Sean Connery. And it sounds ridiculous.
It sounds like the intro to Skype in my head now. It sounds
I can't take it seriously. Like, he's actually the comic book people have corrected me on this before, but, like, my knowledge of Bane was the cartoonish sidekick to Poison Ivy when Uma Thurman was Poison Ivy. Like, that's what I thought Bane was. And so this was, like, a much cooler version of that villain to me.
But auto-tune Sean Connery or Scottish Yoda?
All right, it probably – well, no, it's auto-tune Sean Connery if we're using the Finding Forrester Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Then it works, but otherwise Scottish Yoda might be better.
And I still don't know what his motivation is exactly to ruin everything.
There is none. Is Gotham supposed to be New York or is it supposed to be Pittsburgh?
I think it's also supposed to be Chicago.
It's also okay. See, that's the thing. Pick a city.
It'd be funny if Gotham was LA or they just made it look like LA. It's sort of sunny, people are hanging out.
Or just like Omaha. Like if Omaha ever gets big, this is what's going to happen.
Everyone in Gotham is obsessed with Gotham, man. They're just obsessed with it, you know. They can't stop talking about it. I guess it's a metaphor of some kind.
Maybe it's Boston.
It could be.
Maybe it's Boston.
I mean, Boston is also obsessed with Boston. We've already done the whole Frank Costello comparison, and also, you know, I have to say, watching Heat made me like the town less recently. I just thought this is so much like the town. Like, what's
it is? It is very much like that. I like the town a lot.
You like the town?
Yeah, I'm not proud of it.
I just don't get why Don Draper cares so much and why he's so angry and obsessed. Why all these detectives, the FBI guys, they're just so gotta catch your guy. They're just so angry all the time.
Yeah, I would not be that way as an FBI agent.
Oh no,
I would
no.
just be flash my badge to get through airport security a lot faster. I would be a terrible FBI agent.
Yeah. I wouldn't be well suited to the job, but I also think we're talking about realism where they talked about how there were some like 300, the capital of bank robberies is Charleston. I looked that up. That's not true. Boston is so self-aggrandizing as sort of tough and crime-ridden, and it's actually just this delightful city with very little crime. And they want to project this image of being hard-edged in all these movies, and it is utter BS. There's no way that could be happening.
Just be happy there isn't a real Gotham.
I just love how in all these bank heist movies, how everything goes wrong and it also happens in broad daylight. Well, I guess bank robberies have to happen in broad daylight.
It's hard to rob a bank at midnight.
It's really hard.
It's really hard to get the teller to do what you want.
It's like you're just yelling at the absence of anybody there. Yeah. Open the vault!
That's why Bandits is such a great movie. Have you seen Bandits?
I haven't seen Bandits.
Bandits you would love.
Oh,
it's really? Bruce Willis. It's Billy Bob Thornton. It's about bank robberies, but they
I've
do
seen
it.
Parts.
Yeah,
I've you seen should, parts you should, of Bandits. Isn't there some sort of love? Is Cate Blanchett in that?
Yes.
Whatever happened to her?
Got old.
Is that? I think that would have been perfect if you just ended the podcast on got old right there.
That's usually my answer for whenever someone says, whatever happened to so-and-so actress? I just say got old. Because
yeah, Hollywood doesn't let you just be a normal,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you got to be some kind of different for Hollywood to just let you be.
They only let Susan Sarandon age. That's all. That's the only one.
And
that's
Helen,
everybody
and Helen,
else.
Helen Mirren, but they didn't even let Helen Mirren age until much later.
They kept, you know, they kept Helen Hunt trapped in a peat bog, you know, for about 10 years. And then, recently they released her again.
Yeah, they tried Goldie Hawn, that didn't work out well.
Death Becomes Her was pretty good.
That was like 25 years ago.
I'm just showing my age right there. I'm not even sure if she was in that.
No, she's definitely in that.
I mix her up with Sally Field, quite frankly.
It was 19.
I haven't seen Sally Field in a while.
You just referenced a 1992 movie as something current.
That is very true. It's just the most memorable thing she's been in, you know?
Did you say Sally Field's in that movie?
No, but I just mix up Goldie Hawn with Sally Field. And to show my age, the last thing I remember Sally Field in was probably either Mrs. Doubtfire or, whatever it's called, where her daughter is trapped in Iran.
Wow, you didn't reference Forrest Gump at all.
She was in Forrest Gump.
She's the mom.
Oh, yeah. But I'm not... Yeah, that's... Okay, I remember that.
Oh,
now.
She's in the Spider-Man movies now. She's Aunt May.
I apologize, Sally Field. I should have been paying better attention to your career.
Comic book nerds are going to light this podcast on fire.
Yes.
They're
well,
not happy.
Look forward to it. Your response can be my response, which is, I don't care.
Yeah, we should probably end this. It's been...
We should.
Yeah.
We should have ended it at,
Maybe I'll make this a DVD extra.
This is a DVD extra. I like what we do, Zach. I like putting the extraneous stuff at the end for those who have been foolish enough to listen to that point.
Yeah, and if you've kept listening at this point, my God.
If you've kept listening to this point, I thank you, but man, do I not respect you.
No respect at all. All right. Ethan Sherwood Strauss, follow you on Twitter at Sherwood Strauss. You write everywhere. You're good.
I try.
I appreciate it, my friend.
Life being on, my friend. Talk to you later.
Thanks.